Hello and welcome to Popcorn Mumbles, the podcast where we dig into the back catalog to select a film or television show to rewatch. I'm your host, Cody Nestor. Alongside me is my co-host, Todd Heal.
What's going on, guys?
This week, we've chosen the 2005 film Layer Cake. An unnamed mid-level cocaine dealer in London makes plans to step away from the criminal life. Before he can cut ties, the dealer supplier Jimmy Price draws him into a complicated pair of jobs involving kidnapping the teenage daughter of a rival gangster and brokering the purchase of a large shipment of ecstasy pills from a dealer known as the Duke, leading to a series of elaborate double crosses from all corners. Layer Cake was released on June 10th, 2005. On a budget of $6 million, it made $11 million. It has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 81% and an audience score of 84%. So, Todd, let's discuss Layer Cake. Spoilers are ahead.
Okay.
So, Todd, I'm going to bat the ball to you first here. So, did you know anything about Layer Cake before watching it?
I had heard of this movie. It's just one of those I never picked up, never watched. I knew it was a Daniel Craig film, like, you know, his pre-Bond stuff, but I never watched it till this week.
Yeah, it was one of those I'd seen it before. It's been years since I'd seen it. Like, I didn't watch it before seeing Casino Royale. It was one of those things, like, after Casino Royale and how much I love that and, you know, like Daniel Craig as an actor. It's like, oh, Layer Cake, this is kind of it was his Bond audition in a way, really.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'll go back and watch it. But it's been so long since I've seen it, I remembered absolutely nothing about it.
Yeah.
So what were your first impressions, let's say, after watching the film?
I actually enjoyed this movie. I've always liked, you know, it's not really so much of a crime drama as it's a sort of a, you know, kind of street level drug dealers kind of, you know, double crosses, triple crosses.
Right.
But, you know, I enjoy kind of stuff like that. You know, the world of crime. Yeah. Right. You know, I'm just kidding.
Right.
But I enjoyed it. It was a good watch.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I mean, I haven't seen too many of them. Like, it's like a Guy Ritchie. It's like Guy Ritchie light.
Yeah.
Matthew Vaughn's first film, and that's kind of why we selected it this week and kind of in the lead up to his new film, Argyle, coming out in just a little, you know, a few weeks. I wanted to kind of go back and kind of look at some of Matthew Vaughn, and I was like, what better way to start than just his first kind of first film? He hasn't done too many, but, you know, I wanted to kind of go back to this one because it's it also kind of fits. It does. We're right in the middle of Bonduary as well. So it is Daniel Craig. There is a lot of, like, this was the film that propelled him to that role and kind of was, like I said, it was his audition for Bond pretty much. So I kind of wanted to go back and go through it and just kind of remember what the film was even about. And it's kind of become one of those kind of cult movies. Because as you can see, or as you heard from my intro, a $6 million budget, it only made $11 million.
Didn't have a lot of box office.
Yeah, not many people saw this at the time, and I don't know how many people you would, if you stopped 10 people on the street, how many people would, have you seen Layer Cake?
Are you familiar with Layer Cake?
Yeah. Is that a dessert?
Is that dessert?
No, like, no. It's
Pepperidge Farm?
It's a 2005 crime film starring Daniel Craig. Yeah, they'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about, guy. Leave me alone. Stop touching me. But, like, I don't know. It is a good little movie. Like, it's not too complex. Like, you talk about there's double crosses and there's triple crosses, but there's never, like, you're never lost in it.
It never gets really overly confusing. You can follow it.
Exactly. It's never like, okay, who is this and what did he was the guy who did the thing. It's never like that. Narratively, it flows along pretty nicely. It's a 2-hour-ish movie. I think it's maybe even, it's 2 hours or so right under.
It was right, maybe like 1:45, 1:50.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. It runs the appropriate length of time. It's not too drawn out. It's not a 3-hour Scorsese film.
Right.
Nothing against Scorsese, but it's not like a 3-hour real deep crime drama. So, yeah. Todd, can you kind of take us a little bit through the plot here? Like, I don't want to get too deep in it because there is a lot of, like, back and forth and double crosses, but can you kind of take us a little bit through the plot a little bit?
So basically, we're introduced to the guy with no name, the drug dealer with no name.
Yeah, unnamed mid-level cocaine dealer, as I mentioned. He's represented by four exes, so Quadruple X.
We'll call him Quadruple X.
You can call him Daniel Craig.
Yeah. I mean, funny thing about this is I try to do just some little notes for every one of these movies so I can kind of have my place. And I'm like, what the hell was Daniel Craig's name in this? So he didn't have one. That's why I never couldn't go back and find it.
Exactly. And when you're watching the movie, you don't even really think about it.
Yeah.
You really, and there's a note that I have later that I'll kind of spoil here. This is based on a book, and, the author, intended that the four X's were to kind of, it was intended to like be a placeholder, and I'll give him a name later. And when the author was done with it, it's like, well, narratively, the story works without him having a name.
Yeah.
And when you're watching it, you really don't even think about it at all. So.
My name? If you knew that, you'd be as clever as me.
Kind of, we're basically introduced to him, and he's got his own little, just kind of a small gang, and he's just kind of, he's making good, he's doing good, he's making his money, and he's kind of ready to give it up. He wants to step away from all this, but they've kind of got a meeting set up which is where their boss or supplier, his name was Jimmy, and Jimmy's got a couple big missions he wants him to take on before he hangs it up. Like you mentioned, he wants him to find and locate the daughter of that rival boss of theirs, and they also wants him to help the Duke and his gang of ignorance.
Yeah,
exactly. Try to move a shit ton of ecstasy they've acquired.
Yeah, and at the beginning of the film, you kind of see Daniel Craig and kind of the inner workings of his little cocaine dealer hustle. And you can see he's very meticulous. He's very rules-based. We kind of get some, he's kind of our narrator through the film at the beginning of it, especially. He's got kind of really three main people in his endeavor. It's him, it's Clarky, played by Tom Hardy, who doesn't really get a lot to do in this. He's just Tom Hardy before he was Tom Hardy.
Right.
Very early role for him as well. I think he's got another buddy, I forget his name. Charlie maybe. No, not Charlie. I could be wrong, but he's got another buddy, and then his other kind of the guy that he kind of works for, that's kind of a bridge between him and Jimmy, is a guy named called Morty.
Right.
And I like kind of seeing the inner workings. And like you said, he's on his way out. He's made his money. He's making a lot of money, and he's wanting to get out of the business. Before something happens, before things go wrong, he's on his way out. We also see he was kind of put by Jimmy. He was put onto this guy to actually help him like with his money and balance his books and launder his money for him.
Yep.
That will kind of come back to a little bit later on.
Right.
The gangster that you mentioned, he wants him to find the daughter of Michael Gambon's character, who is, if people don't know, the late Michael Gambon, Dumbledore fame.
Right.
Lots of great roles. He wants him to find his daughter, and there's kind of a little subplot of that as well. But tell us how things go wrong here, Todd, with the ecstasy pills and the Duke.
So we find out that the Duke actually stole those pills from like a much bigger gang. Were they Russian? I can't remember if they were Russian.
I don't think it really matters. It's one of those we'll just say vague Eastern European.
Yeah, they were much more well established, much more dangerous group of people that the Duke's ignorant posse stole all his ecstasy from.
Yeah, exactly. And Jimmy wants Daniel Craig to broker that deal to make Jimmy money to get those ecstasy pills, find a buyer, make him a shit ton of money in the process.
Right. So from there, it's just we find out that the guys that they've got the ecstasy stole from them have this assassin type guy working for them called the Dragon.
Yeah,
he pops up from time to time wanting to try to make Daniel Craig's life a living hell.
Exactly. Morty's kind of removed from the film early on, so we get a little backstory with Morty. So when things start going wrong with the deal with the Duke, because the Duke doesn't want to accept the price that Daniel Craig and company are offering, he's trying to explain like how you can't just, who's going to be a buyer for this, like they're stolen property, blah blah blah. But Morty, the go-between, he's taken out of the film pretty early because we see a little bit of his backstory. Him and Daniel Craig are just having a nice little some tea and a meal, you know, at a cafe.
Oh, yeah.
And one of his Morty's old associates, who we see that actually got Morty busted and sent away to prison, kind of reappears, asks Morty for money, and Morty just beats the shit out of him.
Beats him to like an inch of his life. Exactly. Pretty much. Pours hot tea on him.
Exactly. Like, puts him in a coma, and yeah. Like you left, a lot of the movie is left, like, is that dude gonna, is he, you know, in the background scenes, is like, oh, they're still waiting to figure out if he dies or not, because if he dies, then Morty's on the hook for it. So, like, Morty's kind of taken out of the film pretty early on, and Daniel's kind of left to his own devices to try to, like, figure stuff out with not much help at all.
And somewhere around that time, we see that somebody, you caps off the Duke. The Duke gets shot.
Yeah, exactly. You don't see it. You assume it's the dragon.
Right.
But we'll come to find out later on it's not the dragon. But, yeah, someone takes out the Duke and his mouthy girlfriend, who starts, you know, yapping about the cops and then starts saying police.
She was really annoying.
Yeah, exactly.
She played that part to a T.
Exactly. Once you get in to start saying, you know, police and stuff, you got to.
You're going to get capped.
You got to go. But, yeah, it's basically a lot of the mid scenes we should mention. It's another character that we haven't really talked about is Sienna Miller. She's one of those, like, she's featured on the poster and stuff. She's, like, heavy in the marketing. She is basically Daniel Craig, future James Bond, meets Ben Whishaw, future
Q.
his future quartermaster. I think his name is Sydney, if I'm not mistaken.
Sydney, yeah.
And he's got a girlfriend, Sienna Miller. I do not remember her name. I couldn't even tell you if she has a name in the movie. But she's introduced, and she has a scene with Daniel Craig where they almost have some sexy time, but they don't quite. He kind of meets him and Sydney are kind of hanging out in a bar. She kind of obviously has a kind of attraction to him. He has attraction to her. She right. slips him his number. They have an almost sexy time scene with a little bit of Sienna Miller nudity, and then that character goes nowhere.
Right,
She even in it after that point?
She's there at the end when he's walking out, right?
Yeah, that's she comes. Her, yeah. She comes back.
That's her. That's
but
it.
But she has very little to nothing to do in this film. She's just kind of there for a phone scene, the club scene, a phone scene, a little sexy time bedroom scene that doesn't go anywhere because he gets kidnapped,
and the final scene.
Yeah, she really has nothing to do. So talk about the kidnap scene.
So XXXX or Daniel Craig is taken up to the top of like a building, looks like it's under construction, and we find out he's been kidnapped by let's see, I got his name here, hold on, Michael Gambon, Eddie Temple.
Yes
it was Michael Gambon, the rival boss, and he starts to kind of put old 4X straight, you know, like, you know, telling him Jimmy ain't all that, you know Jimmy's led you astray on a lot of stuff, and we find out that
Funny Jimmy at the country club kind of thing. Right, like, Jimmy's a dumbass. Yeah. Like, you think he's this big, tough gangster, and we make fun of him every chance we get at our country club.
And one of the guys that works for Eddie's got, like, a DVD, a recording of Jimmy talking to, I think it was the cops. Was it the police he's in with? Where they've got that recording of him kind of, spilling his guts about everything. And he actually, of course, he doesn't mention him by name because he's never mentioned by name. But he talks about this, you know, kind of up-and-coming drug dealer that's trying to get out that, you know, we're not going to let him out kind of thing.
Yeah, he wants to fuck him over just because, like, he just doesn't like him for whatever reason. You know, he makes his money and he's good at his job. He thinks he's, like, slick and, like, a know-it-all and that kind of stuff, and he wants to just fuck him over for no reason.
So he's kind of opening his eyes to you. Your world ain't exactly what you think it is.
Exactly. Another character that we should mention here is Gene. He's played by Miles O'Brien.
Right.
Comini. Miles O'Brien being his character from Star Trek.
Right.
But, yeah, he's one of those that guys. Like, he pops up in a lot of movies. Like, hey, it's that guy.
I was the same way. I know he was in something in Star Trek, but I couldn't remember his character name.
Miles O'Brien. Yeah, he was in stuff like Con Air. You know, he's like with John Cusack. And, like, he's just he's a that guy. He's in, like, a lot of different stuff. He plays Gene. He's kind of Jimmy's right hand.
Right.
But then he kind of becomes kind of more of Daniel Craig's kind of right hand and the kind of like advisor to him.
Yeah.
So at one point, once Michael Gambon's character reveals to 4X, we'll call him.
Gone full 4X.
4X, that Jimmy's a rat, basically. Then Jimmy's got to go.
Jimmy's got
to go. And Daniel Craig had previously, since he's being also being stalked by the Dragon, the Eastern European hitman, he'd borrowed a very weird looking gun from Gene, yeah. which I think is like a Chinese like municipal services type of weapon or something. I read something about it. It's a very weird looking gun. It's cool, but it's very weird looking.
Yeah.
And so he takes it upon himself to gear up, to put on the balaclava, to put on the black, the black kind of suit.
Some early espionage yeah. infiltration.
Yeah, exactly. And he heads off to Jimmy's house and basically pops a cap in Jimmy and takes Jimmy off the board because, again, Jimmy was a rat. Jimmy had to go.
I was thinking there for a second. You know, he kind of paused. He hesitated for a while. I'm like, is he going to do it? Is he going to pull off his mask right. and reveal who he is, then do it?
Exactly.
But, yeah, he popped him.
He finally yeah. does pop him, exactly. And the Duke has already been removed off it. There's a lot of, like, you know, we got to figure out who's still going to be the buyer. Like, he's still got to find a buyer for the Peels. Basically, the Duke's second in command, they're all kind of like, they've pretty much went underground.
Yeah.
They've seen the Duke's got popped by somebody.
They're hiding.
They're hiding, exactly. They're not coming up for air. He's got another, Daniel Craig's kind of working with another set of like drug dealers that he's trying to broker another deal with for some of the drugs and things like that. But that's where we get into like the third act of this film. It's a lot of that's where you're like double, triple, who's working for who.
Yep, yeah.
And it's too much to go into and too complicated to get into with something like this to like really break it down. But it's some good stuff. It's never like too much. It's never like aha, like too. Yeah. It's never too much. It's a good balance of like double crosses and you know who's working for who and who's really got this plan kind of in action kind of thing.
I'll give it the ultimate compliment right now. I could follow it.
That's saying something.
That's saying something.
If Todd could follow along yeah. with the twists and turns of this film,
yeah,
then it's pretty narratively set pretty
sound
well.
Sound and solid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, things are kind of resolved in the third act. There's something I'm forgetting though that I wanted to kind of touch on. The scene with the assassination attempt of the Dragon.
Oh yeah.
So at one point, Daniel Craig he asked there's another set of drug dealers he's working with that figures into our last kind of who's working with who double cross type stuff, and he asked them for a guy that can help him try to take out the Dragon because right. he's having like a phone tag session with the Dragon, like do you know where I live? The Dragon's like, no, fuck off, you know, those kind yeah. of things, and he's having a little a phone tag match with him, so he wants to try to take out the Dragon, so he sets up a public meeting with him at like the observatory,
right?
And
right.
he wants somebody to come along with him to basically assassinate and take out the Dragon. They think they found their man, but unfortunately it's not, and the Dragon actually ends up sniping the sniper.
Yeah, that was cool.
It was cool. It's like you didn't expect it. There's a note I have kind of about that, about what was originally planned. But another little great scene, you just kind of see that dude's melon get popped and then it's like, again, it's not an overly violent film,
it really
but it
isn't.
Does have little small yeah. moments of violence that just punctuate the things going on. And another credit, like, again, it's a Matthew Vaughn film. It's very early on in his career. It's his first film. It doesn't have, like, if you think about a Matthew Vaughn film today, like, to me, I would imagine a Matthew Vaughn film having like a church scene from The Kingsman.
Right.
Like, that's kind of what I associate now with, like, Matthew Vaughn films. They need to have some kind of big,
over-the-top type
action yeah. one-shot yeah. kind of thing. This is not that. This is solid. It's not very action-heavy. It's more story-driven. There is punctuated moments of violence, but it's not overly violent. And it does have a style to itself. It has a very nice look, has a nice kind of color palette, kind of blues and greens. Like, it's overall, it's a very nice, attractive looking film. It's solidly made. And there's some visual stuff with the way some of the camera work and things are done. You can kind of see the seeds of some of the things Matthew Vaughn would be known for in the future. I had a kind of a note here, not a note, but a question for you, Todd. So I want you to rank these Matthew Vaughn films for me.
Okay.
So I'll take out Stardust, because I don't think either one of us ever seen Stardust.
I haven't.
Did you see The King's Man?
Is that the newest one?
Yes.
I have not, so okay. I have to recuse myself.
You've seen
myself
the other two,
that.
Right?
Right.
All right, so let's say Layer Cake, Kick-Ass, X-Men First Class, and Kingsman 1 and Kingsman 2. Rank those for me.
Ooh. You know, there's something I love about Kick-Ass. I'm probably going to put that at the top.
Okay.
Then I'll probably go First Kingsman, Layer Cake, Second Kingsman, and then was the other one First Class? Ooh, let me redo that. Let me put First Class before Second Kingsman.
Okay.
And then have Second Kingsman bringing up the rear.
All right, pretty solid. Yeah, I think Kick-Ass and probably First Kingsman is probably, like, near the top for me. Like, I enjoyed this film overall. Like, I think it's right in that middle ground. I mean, he only has a filmography of, what is this, going to be 8 films soon when Argyle releases. But so not a lot to go for. But, I mean, overall pretty solid. But, Todd, take us through our ending here a little bit. Like I said, I don't want to get too deep into the double cross weeds and all that, but just kind of sum up our ending and our kind of our last scene here.
So, Quadruple X has another meeting with Eddie, and Eddie's like, he wants to buy those pills. He's like, you know, I'll give you $3 million for him, but he's like, well, you know, I've already got another buyer. He's like, eh, he'll understand.
Right.
So he pretty much, he wants those pills, but, you know, Quadruple X has to get the pills.
Yeah.
So he has to go back to the Duke's old gang, and he goes back to try to broker something with them, but then the cops break in. And we find out it ain't really the cops.
it's another set of kind of hucksters, kind of confidence men that he's used to. He set them out looking for the girl. We should mention the girl's plot is resolved. She's never found by Daniel Craig. She's already fine, and she's in rehab somewhere basically already.
So he gets the pills back and goes to have his meeting with Eddie. But, you know, of course, Eddie's not really going to give $3 million for those ecstasy pills.
Right.
We have yet another double cross.
Right.
He's just going to take the pills from Daniel Craig, you know, give him a little life lesson learned in crime. And, well, you know, he don't really wind up with them because that set of gangs that he was working with, he was going to sell the pills to originally. They come back and ambush and get those pills back.
Exactly.
So at the end, we kind of see Quadruple X is kind of, he looks like he's set to be the leader of that little gang. Mm-hmm. You know, they're in that same restaurant and he's kind of holding court, but he's like, guys, I'm done. This is yours. I'm walking out. I'm like, man, he's getting away. He's going to be a happy ending. He's going to walk out. That girls are waiting for him. Yeah. And old Sidney shows up and pops a cap right in the middle of his chest and he dies right there on the steps.
Well, we technically don't see him
die. We don't see him die.
But he's left in a bad way.
It's a pretty good chest wound he had.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Yeah.
I really didn't remember the ending. Did you see the ending coming?
I didn't see it coming. You know, Sidney all through this film does seem like kind of less like a bumbling doofus. Like, wasn't the Duke his brother?
Uncle or something like that.
They were related somehow. They just both kind of seem like this kind of like bumbling doofuses. How did they get to where they even were?
Right.
And, you know, he had enough balls to walk up on the steps and shoot him in the chest.
That's true.
Because he took his girl.
He took his girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let that be a lesson to everyone.
Let that be
out
a
there.
Lesson to everyone out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Never rub another man's rhubarb.
Todd, you want some cake bits?
And cake bits. Yeah. I love them. Let's do it.
Again, as we said, it was Daniel Craig's performance in this movie that caused producer Barbara Broccoli to take notice and think he might be a good fit for James Bond. She was very, very, very much correct.
Yes.
When Gene gives 4X a handgun, producer and director Matthew Vaughn said on the DVD commentary that that scene, that Daniel Craig wants to be James Bond. Craig would be cast as James Bond in Casino Royale, and his co-star Ben Whishaw would appear in future Bond films with Craig. So they knew it before it even happened. The actor who played Duke is Jamie Foreman, son of notorious London gang enforcer Freddie Foreman.
Oh.
Layer Cake author J.J. Connelly designated his protagonist as 4X in his mind until he could think of a suitable name for the character, ultimately decided that character didn't need a name for the story to be effective. Guy Ritchie was in place to direct, but another commitment meant he had to drop out. So as we said, it's this kind of Guy Ritchie. It's very much a Guy Ritchie vein kind of film, like, you know, in his vein of films. But it's Guy Ritchie light. It does have more Matthew Vaughn style than a Guy Ritchie film. But it's definitely, if you just seen it, didn't know who directed it, like, yeah, it's a Guy Ritchie film. Yeah. The first draft of the screenplay was 408 pages long. The book on which it was based is 344 pages.
Shit, bigger than the book, huh?
In the penultimate scene at Stoke Park Country Club, Forex and his fellow drug dealers are eating a layer cake, as you mentioned, when they're holding court.
That's right. They were eating a layer cake.
Daniel Craig and Ben Winshaw would reunite years later in the Bond movie Skyfall, Spectre, No Time to Die, respectively playing Bond and Q. As of 2021, fellow actor Tom Hardy has been touted as one of the highly possible successors for Daniel Craig as the infamous MI6 spy. Uh-huh. In the original ending, the original ending, the ending Sony Pictures wanted, producer and director Matthew Vaughn to use shows 4X driving off into the sunset with his new girlfriend. Vaughn secretly recorded the alternate ending showing 4X being shot by Sydney to the screening audience and ended up using it based on popular vote, stating it was not like other American movie endings.
Nice.
I think that's a better ending than just driving off into the sunset.
It works. It works.
In the novel, the protagonist and his hired cold sniper shoot an American tourist, mistaking him for Hitman Dragon. This movie was originally going to play the scene out in the same way, but Sony Pictures felt uncomfortable with killing the American and asked for the scene to be changed. It was. Dragon snipes the sniper before he takes the shot at the tourist, which producer and director Matthew Vaughn's commentary state makes for a better scene. Would you agree, Todd?
I would agree, yeah.
All right, Todd. Final thoughts and your review score for Layer Cake.
This is probably one of those movies that I would probably have spent the rest of my life being aware of, but never would have watched. Cody said, "Hey, we're going to check out Layer Cake for the pod this week." I'm like, "Okay," and I'm glad I did. You can definitely see the Daniel Craig Bond influence in this film. If this is what won him the job, you can definitely see why here. I thought it was just a great little kind of street level gang crime type movie. I would recommend it if you haven't watched it. I gave Layer Cake a 7, which on our scale is good.
Yeah, I echo those same thoughts. Good, solid movie. It's not overly complicated. It's not overly long and blown out. It's just a good, solid, kind of low-level crime film with a really good cast and some interesting moments. Like I said, not overly violent, but good, like, punctuated violence here and there. It's a very nice looking film and very well directed. So I'm going to go with you as well. I'm going to give Layer Cake a 7 out of 10, which ranks it as good. Todd, tell everyone how they can find us and stay up to date with us on social media.
We are at Towel Capes on YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. Towel Capes Podcast on Facebook. You can also email us at towelcapespod@gmail.com.
If you enjoy the show, please consider following us on your podcast platform of choice and subscribing to our YouTube channel. Popcorn Mumbles will return next week. We want to thank you so much for listening. Until next time, bye, guys.
See you, guys.